Bob Frankston. Been around forever. Actually, I think it's, what year is this? I think I've been programming for about 43 years now.
So tell me about the first spreadsheet, because as I understand, your picture is on the wall here at the Computer Museum in Mountain View, California.
Yes, I turned them down because they were going to bronze me, but I decided that was a step too far. There's a VisiCalc, basically. You know, I'd already been programming for many years by then, and a friend of mine basically realized it's silly to have to do all these calculations by hand and have these computers. And we were originally going to do it on some small computers, but these personal computers are coming out, these game machines. And a game machine is a wonderful platform. And the great thing about it was, even though it had been working with mainframes, it was freedom to basically work down to the iron, to do all the hardware again, and drill down. And, you know, here at Mashup, it's, the APIs give you a lot of leverage, but there's also part of me that says, there's already too much mechanism. I really want to basically be able to roll everything myself and change the rules, not just choose which. So I'm torn between the excitement about all the power you get by mixing and matching. But there's also a step beyond that where, you know, if everybody knows it should be done, it's already too late and I'm interested. So I'm interested in like what the hardware devices are, going real beyond the concept of what people think is computing.
At an event like this, you know, obviously people are looking at new ways of doing things with existing tools. In some ways we have this patchwork quilt of applications, platforms, operating systems, and that sort of thing. Are these mashups, are they going to just reinforce, not the mashups themselves, but the ideas behind them, just reinforce this idea that we're going to have to work within this patchwork quilt of applications,
you know,
OSs and things?
I look at it multiple ways. I mean, part of me is sort of, there's a contrarian sense, just if everybody's doing something, there must be another way to look at it. So this part of me. But there's also part of me exciting, like, okay, what can I do building on, like, the Google Earth maps and things like that? When I travel, I stick a little GPS under the shade. Don't tell the airlines that. They have this superstitious view of these electronic waves. So I can try, you know, I'm interested. Okay, here's a trip. When I looked at this, what was on the ground? So I do want to use all this. I build on all of it. And when I don't have an API, I create my own by screen scraping. But at the same time, I'm also thinking about, okay, where is everybody not? So I look at these, the real computing device that I have with me when I'm carrying around, unfortunately, it's now locked down into being a cell phone, which is a pain. But you really want to use it, you know, you want to integrate. You want to have a ubiquitous connectivity and really use it. So I see, you know, on the positive side, there's wonderful stuff here. There's a lot of enthusiasm, but I also want to go beyond that to basically deal with the world at large, not just layer on the computer stuff.
Well, let's talk about the possibility of these phones becoming really powerful computing devices.
Phones? No, you've got it backwards. The fact that you call them phones already is giving up the game. You don't want your connectivity on the platform to be hostage to the carriers. Now, I can add a connection to my computing device arbitrarily rather than calling it a phone, but you still have to do it within this carrier model. What you really want is connected computing devices. A telephone call is an application. It's not something done by the phone company. Even in the old days, you would create the phone calls by speaking to the carbon mic. And they would just carry the bits. It used to be especially they carry the bits. Now they're trying to maintain, you know, create their version of the billable internet. But that's really like the robber barons on the railroads who used their ability to get a right of way then to basically, you know, hold the farmers hostage. So I really want more kinds of computer platforms. I mean, I've got like Microsoft Spot Watch, but I want a version that's a two-way connected device so I can use a display on my wrist, for example. So once you start thinking about it as phones, you're giving up much of the game.
Right, I totally see what you're talking about. When it comes to the business models, though, that make the wireless industry possible, that we've... The argument is that you need to have this kind of sort of self-contained, audience-captured system in order to make it work.
If I posted on Frankston.com some essays, there's actually a nice slideshow that cellular companies give that really talk about the problem they're trying to solve. The problem they're trying to solve is there's a real danger, and they're very concerned about it. There's too much connectivity. They've got to prevent abundance. The purpose of the cellular industry and their goal is to prevent this from happening, prevent you from connecting devices without having to go past their trolls. It's an anti-business model. I mean, they're open about this.
Could they exist without this?
No. They cannot. They have no role. The reason is, the same as the roads, and this can go into economic model, is the if you look at a road, you know, the value of the road is not, you can't say this mile of road is worth this much. The value is for having the road as a whole. So roads, or the interstate highways, will bypass towns because there's more value to society as a whole than making sure every town along the way gets its cut of the revenue. And so the value is outside the network. The phone company existed by capturing all the value into the network. So they would charge for a phone call. But as people can start to do things themselves, the value of the network is all outside the network. So you don't have an economic model where a company can make money by self-funding the network. Instead, we have to have a different model, like garbage collection. Do you, when your garbage is collected, do the garbage companies resell the garbage? They come beg you, we want your garbage so we can resell it. No, you pay them to haul it away. So we need a model where you start to pay for the infrastructure, but not the bits. And this works very nicely, because they want to communicate with the neighbor. And the model I've been using is the railroad model. If you have the railroads build a highway, sure you can visit your neighbor, but you'd have to go downtown to buy a railroad, a train ticket, and then walk back. And that's the model now. When you get your DSL connection, you're paying for their connection to the backbone. Well, that...
And what you do on it is
your
business.
But if you want to speak to your neighbor, yeah. But that's even stronger than that. Why do I have to limit my connection to my neighbor by that? If I want to connect to your neighbor, why don't you just throw a fiber across or just look through the window? You know, you get gigabits, terabits of connectivity. So why is my connection to my neighbor limited by my connection across the ocean? That's wrong. That's totally the model that you have when you have the railroads or the telephone companies trying to give you connectivity. They're going to make sure that everything's tariffed through theirs. Instead, what you want to think is local connectivity, it's not capacity. Now, you might get a terabyte to your neighbor, but you might not be guaranteed that across the country. But that's okay. You'll discover what's useful. It turns out that in that model, we have already abundant connectivity, enough to do all of telephony, even cable TV, basically no incremental cost, and we're hardly even lit up the networks. The funding model then has to be an infrastructure model, not a troll model.
Now, let's go back to your original ideas about these mashups and what's possible with them. Now, getting a little clearer on why you think that these have a limited scope.
Well, they're wonderful. I mean, again, I view any experiment in learning as wonderful, but this is just nibbling at what's possible. So, that's always what happens. So I don't want to come across as negative. I think these are wonderful and important events. I will use the APIs. I like to collect my travel data and map it and do things like that. Problem is I see so much more. I'm more excited about what you can do with the light switch. Why do we have to call the electrician in to change the relationship between a light switch and a light? If that relation is defined as software, then we can start experimenting in our environment and changing our world outside the computers. So this is a wonderful, part of it, but it's just part of it.
When you hear the word Web 2.0, what does that mean to you?
Failure of imagination?
I mean, explain.
Well, Web 2.0 is people starting to assume the web, starting to use it a little differently. But I think they're only... It's like people confusing the web and the internet. Sure, you can build on the web. You can do, the HTML has been around for years. People have finally said, oh, we just discovered it. Well, it's been around. So it's great for people to use it for the Ajax, for all this stuff. But at the same time, you can think of it as a sort of a light executable client-side engine. But there's a lot more. I'm interested in real client-side sandboxes, I mentioned earlier. So you can start to do some more powerful apps. JavaScript is a nice language, but scaling it is a pain. But we have other engines. Why not a Flash engine? And that's going to be improving. The key thing with the engine is getting people to download them. So I think these are nice experiments. But the ability to start to assume symmetric relationships, I'm looking at Microsoft's Indigo protocols and things, we're just discovering it. So Web 2.0, in a sense, is, okay, let's assume the web and the ability to connect both ways, and now let's start to discover what it is.
One last question. This has to do with perhaps the biggest thing to hit the internet since it
sliced
started
bread.
To be, since sliced bread. And that is coming. There are huge bets, hundreds of billions of dollars in bets being waged on video and TV over the internet. Are we going to see that?
The reason I'm snoring is, you see, this is a perfect example of failure of imagination. People trying to recreate the old phone network and cable TV network, not thinking of how liberating it is. You know, we can do much more. Of course we can do video over it. It's not video over the net. Forget the net. The net should disappear. Anyway, this is just a prototype of the net. This is not the real net we're going to get. Yeah, there are opportunities to deliver video, but how many people are thinking of it as an opportunity to be accessible, to have more content? Like the podcasts are just accessible. You're not thinking this is radio over the internet. The bigger question is why people launch satellites instead of using the internet. They're going to lose their shirts. They're already starting to. The big thing we're missing, I mean, of course we can do video, but it's not that it's not exciting. It's just, of course, it's sort of an obvious, of course we're going to do it over. It's really the question short of the cable companies. But when you walk around, what's missing, and this goes back to your phone question, one is just assume I've got internet connectivity wherever I am. Then I can do heart monitoring if I want medical. I can just assume any, you wouldn't use the term radio. Well, because, you know, obviously we're going to use for legacy use, just like we use the term dial for a phone. But you're going to be able to get information, connect to other people wherever you are. And I have no idea that's going to play out. What do you do when you don't have a local radio station footprint, but you can reach everything? Well, the satellite people are giving us some sense of it. The podcast obviously available. The question is not so much the bet on doing video, but of course you can do that. It's when are people going to start to realize that it's the internet is not about speed. Of course, that's easy. We're going to get that. It's about availability, and the big problem now is you can't just assume internet availability where you are. I think the municipal Wi-Fi is part of that. The protocols we're going to have to work on, but that's the exciting future, to have it available everywhere.
Are we going to need, over the next 25 years, a Hollywood to create all of the things that we want to watch on video? Are we going to need these media centers,
I'm using the term Tellywood, actually, because television and Hollywood have sort of merged together.
Yeah.
And you remember why Hollywood exists? Because they had to escape Thomas Alva Edison's attempt to control the movie business. And you had abundant sunlight, so you didn't need to close studios and all that. What's changing is not just the internet, it's the tools for creating. And even they're calling it content now. So calling it content is not dismissive, because you've got a different mindset also. I mean, Hollywood doesn't think of movies in the same way. Let's take a DVD. The Hollywood, television people, don't think of a DVD the same as us techies do. For us, the difference between an SD, standard definition DVD, and an HD DVD is more bits. They don't even have a language to view them as the same thing. Once it says HD, but each instance is a new thing. So it's not just the big center, it's a conceptual idea of what you do. We're used to reusable pieces. They're used to everything as a different negotiation configuration. So there's a huge gulf. But the big change is not just that the distribution is going away, but the internet backbone is completely empty. There won't be a way to charge for it once we get rid of these attempts to assure scarcity. But we're also getting tools to create. If you look at today's video boards, what you can do real-time on today's video boards goes so far beyond what you see in the animation programs that one person, and we already see some of this with people using the video games, one person can now talk to tell stories. So in some ways, it'll be more like the book industry. Now, it doesn't mean people are necessarily going to get rich or less rich, but you can start to tell compelling stories without having to pass through this little filter of a studio. That's going to be the real threat to Hollywood. Now, yes, there might be some place for large productions, more like live productions, you know, like, you know, Disney on Ice or something. People like to see that, or the Grateful Dead and the tours, or synthetic experiences like Britney Spears. But what's going to be exciting, the real threat to Hollywood is that the fact production cost is going to allow people to tell, individual small groups to tell compelling stories.
Do you think these mashups are going to, once they start including video, are going to bring about some of these things that you're talking about?
They don't already include video?
Well, they already include video, but
no,
in terms of in terms of being this threat to Hollywood that you're talking about.
Well, I think we already see it. I mean, the real issue, I think, is we're starting to see some independent productions. Mm-hmm. What we're lacking is somebody sort of brokering them into a package like we see now. No, there's somebody's package up Hollywood so you can feel it. What, you know, take a look at South Park. That's an example of, you know, a little Christmas video made very cheaply that's scaled up. Well, there's Icebox, which is beyond South Park Online. There's people doing things with Flash. What we haven't seen is sort of the opiate version, where you just turn onto a channel and shut your mind off and watch. But as that gets organized, I think the piece is in place already to entertain you without going through Hollywood. You know, and a lot of it right now is just the image that people want to see stars. And we just need to see the new market develop. The pieces are all there.
Bob, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Did I go on too long?
Oh, no, that was great.